It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. A very special episode on this winter night as you're listening to us, or maybe it's a winter morning, the wonders of podcasts. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the challenges that are facing rural GAA clubs in Mayo and some of the challenges that are probably facing rural GAA clubs all over Ireland for different reasons. We wanted to take a pause and ask some questions about what it is that can be done to help clubs thrive into the future, to help them deal with the falling numbers that are happening in terms of playing numbers and even right down in terms of population numbers. So from that perspective, we said, let's have a discussion about this. The starting point was Lack in GAA Club, a story that dominated some of the club headlines a few months back. Edwin McGrail joins me in this week's podcast to get things started. We've got a couple of key guests on, Edwin, this week. But we said at the time when the Lacken story broke and we saw the real visceral reaction from GAA fans all around the county to the challenges that were facing a small club like that, we said we need to talk about this and give it a bit of time.
Absolutely. And I think the reason for that reaction was people knew it wasn't just Lacken's story. People knew it could be a story and a reality coming to their door very soon with the way trends have been going. So I think it's worth exploring because it's a major issue that's facing GAA clubs in Mayo and all along the Western Seaboard indeed.
I am absolutely buzzing about the two guests we got to talk about this, because when we were planning it out, we said, right, we need to talk to the right people and you can't talk to everyone. So we've got two really good guests on. First up on my introductions, Professor John Bradley, making his debut on the Mayo News Football Podcast. He's an economist, formerly research professor at the ESRI, thereafter an international research consultant in economic development. He has specialized on the island economy of Ireland, EU cohesion policy, industrial strategy and economic modelling. In 2019, he carried out a study of the economy of Mayo, probably the first time this was ever done on a single Irish county. So from that perspective, I think it's safe to say we could not get anyone better to talk expertly about the socioeconomic factors affecting the communities of Mayo. John, you're currently in Dublin, spend a good bit of time in Murrisk as well. Welcome along to the Mayo News Football Podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure to chat to you in the build up to this one, and we're going to bring you in pretty early on. But before we do so, we want to bring in our final guest, friend of the podcast, Kieran O'Hara, Sky Sports GAA producer, documentary filmmaker, Kiltane GAA chairman, former Kiltane GAA manager, and Duloc resident. How are you, Kieran?
And I identify as chairperson, Rob.
Oh, thank you. Very important. I think I've got a wake up call right there at the beginning of this one. Yeah, a club, and appropriately so, considering you're a club that unites both women's and men's football. But that's for another day. Kieran has joined us to give us a bit of a perspective from one of the leading clubs of the last, the last 40 years in the county, but have been battling against these challenges. Edwin, set the scene for us, though, because there's more than just Lacken, a lot more than just Lacken, obviously, that sparked us into the chat, because Lacken was the conversation that was ongoing that prompted you to delve a little bit deeper into the numbers and see what the story is across the county. And that's why we're here.
Yeah, and it's not just GAA clubs. That's the first thing. This is a GAA problem, but it's also a community problem, and it's a societal problem. So Lacken are far from the only example. And what I've done to be able to kind of look at it empirically is looked at the national school numbers. They're a very good metric of the future of GAA clubs in an area and the future of the area itself. So, for instance, there's only one school in Lacken and there are only 27 pupils in that school. So that would tell you about the future for the club. It's quite bleak. You know, there's no two ways about it. And what we did for the Mayo News a number of weeks ago, I'm using some of those figures here and I've expanded on them. We looked at school figures for the 2020-21 academic year, and we're contrasting them with 1993-94. That was when we were on the cusp of the Celtic Tiger, so it can be instructive as to where in Mayo the Celtic Tiger may have reached or where it may not have reached. Looking at those that have noticed a fall, in Kieran's parish of Kiltane, the current figures are exactly one-third of what they were in 1994. So that means in the three schools in the parish of Bangor, Eris, Kisala and Duhoma, there are 112 pupils compared to 336. Kieran, I think, nearly started crying when I gave him those figures. And it's not just Kiltane. In Achill, where I'm based at the minute, there's currently 199 kids in the seven national schools. In 93-94, there were 473. So that's a similar fall. In Ballycastle, right next door to Lacken, there were 173 kids in two schools in 1994. Now, there's almost a third of that, 64 in the areas only remain in school. And in Ballycroy, who Kiltane have amalgamated at underage level, there were 49 kids in the two remaining schools in the parish. In 93-94, there were 112 in the three schools that were opened in. So all four parishes there have seen school numbers drop by more than half, and considerably more than half. If we contrast in, and John will speak to this later on, the two big towns in South Mayo, Clamorris, with its greater proximity to Castlebar, Galway, and even Dublin, has seen national school figures climb by 17% in that time frame, from 636 to 742. So you're seeing a trend there, and it's even more pronounced in Ballinrobe. There's a staggering 41% increase, from 388 kids in 1994 to 549. And it's not just the south of the county. There's also an urban element to it. So if you look at Castlebar and Westport, two very big urban areas, in Castlebar Parish, two GA clubs, Castlebar Mitchells and Brafey, there are 2,025 national school children. In Westport, home to just one GA club, there's 1,120 national school children. That's exactly 10 times the pick Kiltane have, over 20 times Ballycroy, and over 40 times Lacken. So that will just show the contrast between some of the struggling rural clubs and some of the large urban clubs. And there's so many factors behind them, but they're the numbers, and the numbers are very revealing, and we can go on to discuss from there what those numbers tell us, and why those numbers are as stark as they are.
We'll go to Ciarán in a second. We'll begin with you, John, just to give us, when you saw those numbers, with all the research you've done, both nationwide, but also specifically in 2019 on the economy of Mayo, we want to just get your first take on that. And just to summarise for people, you're talking about Kiltane, Achill, Ballycastle, Ballycroy, all looking at huge drops. You're talking about smaller or big towns in the south of the county, like Claremorris and Ballinrobe, looking at big gains. And then, as Edwin has contrasted quite well there, Castlebar and Westport, just to kind of get an idea of the sheer size of the numbers they have in comparison. So John, just as a starting point, when we put those numbers to you, what was your first reaction?
Well, I'd seen them before. The thing that leaps out at you when you look at, say, the population growth in towns in Mayo of, say, 1,000 or bigger, there's about 12, 13 of them, is there's a north-south divide. And say the worst case, if you take the between the census of 1991 and 2016, which is the latest census, population across Malina fell by 13%. In the same period, the population of Claremorris rose by 93%. Now, people have seen those figures. Everyone knows them. But somehow what you've uncovered is a human side of it that makes people wake up. These are consequences of national development policies that are inexorably playing out in county. And these are the results.
Interesting. Ciarán, I mean, Edwin gave you a phone call one of the days to tell you what he was looking into. He said your reaction. I mean, it's tough to hear that, though, from the perspective of you're looking to the future of your community and you look at the challenges that these numbers suggest are there.
Yeah, but I think the fundamental thing, and John's really hit on it, this is about national policy. We've always had migration or emigration from our area. But what we've never had was a threat to the community in general. You know, you always knew that you had a stern, robust, supportive community around you, but now you're looking at it and you're seeing the demographics in the very, very young, and then the flip side of that is the numbers that are in the very, very elderly. So we're going to have a skip in generations now, and the question is, how do we encourage government, other state agencies, to look at this and create policies which can allow us to thrive? Because one of the things the pandemic taught us was people can work anywhere. So what can we do to encourage people to work in these areas, to break that focus on north-south, as John has described it? But it goes beyond that. I mean, I said to you, Rob, when we were researching this, and we talked about that gap along the northwest and west coasts, that it was very like when we see a map of Ireland and we see the BMW region and we see the east and the south. You know, everything is being magnetized to the southeast if you're in the north end of the country. So Sligo, probably, you might find the development is in the southeast of it. Donegal, the development might be in the southeast of it. Cavan, Monaghan is the same. If we go into Munster, I have no doubt it's northeast. And this is the problem. We've had such a dependence on Dublin as the economic hub of this island that we haven't realized the damage we've done to the rest of it. So the question now for legislators and for us as a public is, how do we fight back and convince them that what's right is to reverse some of those policies and create more space? Because they always talk about spatial strategy. If we create more space for people to work, then we'll have a healthier national balance.
Yeah, and this is the thing. This is the thing, absolutely. And Kieran has touched on it very well there. Like, you know, that it's often looked at that the west of Ireland and the rural Ireland, you know, is a problem child rather than seeing it as a solution. And we're seeing, you know, the opposite problems happening. And Mayo is a microcosm of that. Like, so the problems that are happening for GA clubs in Castlebar, in that there's too many in there and there's congestion, it is also happening in Castlebar itself. The same is true if you compare Mayo to Dublin, you know, where there's too much of a pull towards Dublin. Like John can elaborate on how centralized Dublin is compared to virtually every other European country. So it's not as if, you know, this is a national trend. We're a very centralized country. So, you know, I'd be keen to get John to speak on that. And another question I'd have as well, just to, you know, we're talking about this now and how we need action, but how has it went on for so long, John? You know, how has there been so much indifference, do you think, to these problems? They're very real problems, but they don't really get the oxygen at local level that they need.
Yeah, you see, this has been playing out for decades. In James Laffey's book, Will Galway Beat Mayo, he talked about the abandonment of Inishark in 1960. Now, what happens on an island is that the size of the community falls below a critical threshold where it's no longer viable. And when that happens, it implodes and the area is abandoned. Now, on the mainland, that doesn't happen quite so dramatically. But in places in Northwest Mayo, it's beginning to happen. In other words, the population level and the facilities have fallen below a level that sustains a viable, small, vigorous, but viable population. And why is that not spoken of more? Well, let me say something that might be a bit controversial. I'm glad it has hit the news in the GAA, because now it'll get attention. When economists like me or statisticians come out and we talk about dull, dry figures, nobody relates to it. I'm all right, Jack. No, it's happening to somebody else. Now it's happening to you. And it's happening in this very personal way of areas of Mayo being depopulated. And that's an appalling vista. The problems are complex. We're not well served always by our local politicians. They work hard, but they don't see the big picture. They don't see the strategic consequences of decisions taken in Dublin to focus on five cities as a development model: Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway, and Waterford. And the rest is crumbs from the table. Now, you need a different development model. That's not going to be easy to design, but it has to be on the agenda, a different model that will prevent depopulation.
It's a great point, Kieran, that John is making there. That it is what's woken us. We're a football podcast and we're talking about it now because we just want to know, like, I know from this, from down the south, we just want to know that all you guys are fine, everything's grand. And if I just looked at it, Kilcommon, Belmullet, fine, county finals, everything's grand, it's fine. But then some story comes along like Lacken, you delve five paragraphs into that story and you go, ooh, this isn't good. This can't be good.
No, and one of the jokes I always have with you guys when we talk about, you know, Erris is, and people talk about the Erris mentality, I always describe us as Islanders. I know we're not, but we are. There's only three roads in, one to the east, one to the north, one to the south. So we are very isolated in that regard by infrastructure. Now, when I hear John talking, I'm thinking about all the failed policies of successive governments. But it's not just governments that are to blame. If you recall in the 90s, there was a huge focus on, oh, we're going to decentralize the civil service. They didn't achieve that fully. And that might have provided economic benefit that was more equitably spread throughout the country. And the reason they didn't is there is another body that has failed the public, and that's the public service unions, because they were the ones that objected to that at the time. Now, with the pandemic, we've found that you can work remotely, and we need to remove the barriers to remote working in order to enliven communities that are on the edge and on the verge of disappearing. And if we lose those communities, yes, we can say we're looking at this now because it's football, but it goes farther. I speak Irish. The language has dissipated more in my lifetime than at any other stage in the history of this island. Those are facts. It is so little used now. So we lose aspects of our culture. Gaelic football is just one aspect of our culture. It gives us a social cohesion. It gives us morale. It gives us well-being in that it keeps our young people fit, active, engaged. But we're losing lots of aspects of our culture because of the government's policies. It's not simply about football. And the trouble is that we've almost become kowtowed, and we're afraid to say to the politicians that we demand action. That's where we are now. We need to demand action that progresses our communities rather than allows them to continually regress purely by our apathy.
Yeah, I might just tease out some of the specific issues that might be at play here. And just looking at it from a football perspective, it is a vicious circle. So let's say a player in Gary Moore, Davitt or Ballinrobe in the south of the county, it's a lot easier for them to live at home and work in Galway and commute to Galway. So there's still that footprint in the community. Players in Kiltane or Achill are unlikely to be able to do that. They're more than likely going to be based away. They might commute down to play with their club, but they're realistically going to raise their kids away from home. And there's a number of factors in. So you have people in South Mayo mightn't necessarily be working in South Mayo, but they can live in South Mayo. But there's issues then when it comes to infrastructure, like road and broadband are the main two, you know. And the further west and north you go in the county, the distance from urban centres, that becomes more pronounced. So you're talking about people from Achill that are working in Castlebar or Westport or Ballina. You're talking about an hour of a commute. You know, how many people are going to do that? Some people will. And so slowly but surely, all those people, they still have the tie to home, but they're not able to live at home. They're not able to raise their families at home. And the school numbers reflect that. You know, the school numbers are a result of the amount of people that are able to wait at home in those communities. So if the numbers are hemorrhaging in Kiltane, in Ballinrobe, they're growing. And then you have, you know, another part of it then is, you know, what I might call micro issues. You know, there is a huge onus on national government here in this regard, but there's also a local responsibility, community-led initiatives, you know, making places attractive communities, you know, that bottom-up solutions, I suppose you could say, you know, remote working hubs, they're a step forward. In Achill here, the Community Futures Group is doing a lot of good work to harness what Achill has going for it. They can't work in isolation, but it does have to be part of the solution. But like John mentioned it there, like, I think people have to be far more engaged on this. You know, like, this is, I would fairly confidently say that a lot of our football listeners mightn't be engaged in this discussion, but it's so important, like, and we have to be far more demanding of our politicians. And I'm not making any party political signposts there, like, you know, it's across the board. We have to be far more demanding in what we want from our politicians, and there's a need for a collective approach. Like John mentioned, there, crumbs from the table. Everyone is always looking for their little piece, for their little parish, you know, instead of thinking bigger and thinking, what do we need for our area, what do we need for our region? But right now it's kind of like, you know, one for everyone in the audience, and small little announcements here and there, and they're really not going to change a whole pile.
John, even in this very conversation, we can see the huge divide within a county that is left behind within a nation, if you see what I'm saying. So where do you begin with that? Because if you look at the numbers of Castlebar, Westport, Ballinrobe, Claremorris, everything's grand, all is rosy. But if you think about those places in the context of the entire island, they're battling as well. How does Mayo have a strategy that makes sure that it, I want to find the right words, overcompensates or whatever for those areas that are clearly being left behind?
Yeah, more generally, the Northwest region from Donegal down through Sligo, Leitrim, Roscommon, Mayo, Galway are affected. The history of the deprivation of this region goes way back to the Cromwellian era. But let me say something positive. One of the most exciting firms I visited when I did the study of the Mayo economy was in Balmullet. It's Westire. It's an electronics firm that makes very sophisticated public lighting switches that they export all over the world. They employed 25, 30 people. And when you were inside their factory, you might as well have been inside an Intel plant. It was very modern. Now, what I found when I did that study was I used to come back and go drink coffee in Westport and chat to people. And I'd be telling them, hey, you know, I found this firm that's, you know, making really interesting things and exporting them. Nobody had ever heard of them. In other words, somehow we have delegated interest and responsibility for our enterprise sector to somebody else, the government, Enterprise Ireland, the IDA. We don't celebrate these people. We don't talk about them. The Mayo News has an extraordinarily large and wonderful sporting supplement every week. It hasn't got a business supplement. We don't talk about the enterprise sector that's in Mayo. Now, the problem is, of course, there aren't enough of these firms. So don't get hung up on the pandemic is going to mean that Dublin-based civil servants are now going to be working from Achill Island. There'll be an element of that. But when the pandemic passes, you're down to the bedrock of can firms, innovative firms set up in this region? And if they find it difficult to do that, what's stopping them? And what's stopping them largely is the transport and communication infrastructure. Of course, North Mayo is going to be in decline from a population point of view, because it's difficult to get in and out there. And that was why earlier in the year, I helped people, West on Track, put together a case fighting the disgraceful report which rubbished the Western Rail Corridor. The Western Rail Corridor would connect North Mayo down to Galway. Galway would become the place where people would go to rather than Dublin. It would make it easier to connect to Sligo as well. In other words, you would build up the small town system you have in Mayo. The biggest town is 12,500. That's too small. It's not viable enough. You have to build these up. And nowadays, you don't need 1.4 million people to get anything going. That business model is breaking down. Crime, pollution, congestion. Our cities have become totally dysfunctional. Yet we're still pouring investment into these cities to build undergrounds in a low-rise city. I mean, is anything dafter than that? Yet we have a potentially viable railway line linking Galway all the way up to Sligo and potentially continuing on to Derry, which is the only sizable city in the northwest segment of the island, and we don't do it. Now, our local politicians can swing that. They get the odd road or two, but they can't change the way development policy and spatial development policy is set in the island. And the only people who are going to change that are us, the people from this region, who face up to the problems of developing this region. It's not going to be easy, but the potential is wonderful. In other words, Dublin regards the Northwest region as a sink. It's a place you pour money into and you don't get a very big return. I regard it as an unexploited resource that's been neglected and has fallen into disuse. You've got to change that mentality.
Yeah, one of the things that interests me in the figures that John mentioned, he mentioned Cross Malina. And if you look at what historically was the major source of employment in the parishes of Kiltane and Cross Malina, it was Corrick. It was the peat plant in Ballycorrick. Now, obviously, there's a large energy-producing infrastructure having been put in there, but it doesn't generate the kind of jobs that were generated by the peat plant. And if, for example, Intel closed in the morning, they'd be uproar about the impact that would have on the economy in the east. But there's a comparable impact when you lose something like those jobs in the peat plant in the communities like ours. And John's absolutely right. We've got to actually stress to people that we're not a sink. We have able, qualified, willing, hardworking people here. And that all we're requesting is assistance so that we can take advantage of that opportunity. West Ayr is a great example. Now, that is the product both of a particularly innovative entrepreneur and the supports he received from Udras na Gaeltachta. But we've got to make cases, not just because of the way society is divided and government is divided. It's not simply a case of making these cases to politicians. We've got to start making these cases to Enterprise Ireland, to the IDA, to all of the agencies that support industrial development. And if we can do that, we have a chance to rebuild our communities.
And I think a lot of this, again, comes back to the point I was making earlier. You know, seeing this region as a solution rather than a problem. And I think we've seen that. And John touched on the Western Rail Corridor. And the apathy from central government, and particularly from the Department of Transport, towards that project. And I don't think it would be possible to do justice in one podcast to how bad the official Ireland report was on the viability of the Western Rail Corridor. It was a shocking document altogether. And John's report was just so much more thorough by comparison. But again, this is the issue you're dealing with. And Eamon O'Queeve uses a phrase regularly called MAD, maximum administrative delay. And he says that they will never say no, that something is not going to happen, but they will kick the can down the road. They'll kick it into another report and into another report. And he said that was Monsignor James Horan's expression, maximum administrative delay. And Knock Airport is there now, not because of government support. It's one of the most important pieces of infrastructure, the most important piece of infrastructure, arguably, in Mayo. It's not there because of government backing. The government were dragged kicking and screaming. It was the singular vision of one man that meant that Knock Airport is there today. And that conflict between us in the West and central government and the permanent government in the civil service, that, you know, that hasn't changed from what I can see. And John has much more experience and much more expertise in this. But I don't know, John, is that still the nub of the problem for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to begin to think of what kind of a county do you want and what kind of a county is it feasible to get. Clearly, the southern Mayo towns, with their proximity to Galway, the first, second, or the fourth biggest city on the island, that's very important. But you get a different type of economy with small businesses. You can piggyback quite a lot of interesting enterprises on the tourist trade. In other words, quality food products, the mayofood.ie initiative, the gourmet greenway. But you've got to think in a connected way. And I have nothing against politicians. Some of them work very hard. But there is a mentality where it's always, you ask the politicians to solve the problem. And that is the problem. You know, Ronald Reagan used to joke that government isn't the solution, it's the problem. It's the opposite case here, that the problem really is that people will not take on a form of local governance which begins to organize and bring about constructive change. Now, I know from bitter experience that Irish people are notoriously fractious. They find it very hard to reach compromises, to do trade-offs. And the result is that often nothing gets done. So the deep-seated structural problem in Ireland is that we have a highly centralized government. Our TDs, with all due respect, are kind of glorified county councillors. Our county councillors have almost no power because the county councils have almost no budget or no serious responsibility for development in a county. So we petition our TDs, who then petition Dublin. Now, as rural depopulation works its course, or it may not be depopulation, it may be the population growth is just slower in rural Ireland than in the more developed east and south, our representation in the Dáil falls. So at the time of the formation of the present government, I think all but three ministers were from either the greater Dublin area or from Cork. And that's what you get when you get depopulation. You lose even the limited ability you have to get your politicians to make a development case for your region. You lose that because there are fewer of them. Now, I don't know how you go about that, but it would help. You know, the reason why the GAA, I wrote a column in the Mayo News the other week, and I contrasted the extraordinary energy of the GAA in pulling Galway and Mayo up to the very highest standards in the 60s and early 70s with the assumption that our economic well-being is going to be delegated to somebody else. I'm too busy playing football to worry about this. I'm afraid that attitude has to change.
That's a brilliant segue, because I was just about to ask Ciarán, you're a chairperson in a club. Can the GAA play a role in this? Can sporting bodies play a role in pushing back and maybe get ahead of the politicians?
I think absolutely you can. I mean, I think there's often a fear within the GAA, because it's an apolitical association, to address societal issues. But very typically in the smaller communities, it is the one organisation perhaps that has an ability to communicate, that has an ability to harness unity, and they do that on a football field, but you can apply that energy off the field, and you can try and bring your community together as an act for change. Now, you don't have to tell them who to vote for. You don't have to tell them to change historical preferences in that regard. What you can say to them is, we require economic development here. We need the community to get behind it, to demand it. I mean, when John talks about the peaks that Galway and Mayo reached in the 60s, it's funny, politics in Ireland was very different at the time as well. I mean, in the 50s, we had small parties that were purely focused on Western development. And we've become very homogenised since. I mean, at the last election, I was looking at it kind of going, would we not have been better off having the Farmers' Party and Clonathalun here? Because purely by them taking seats from the governing parties, they might have been able to force recognition or force change. And I don't think, with the best will in the world, that any of the other parties, smaller parties, do that at the moment. They've got very different agendas. So we, to a certain degree, when you see people protesting about pyrite, you know, you think there should be more of us supporting them, because that's another reflection of the apathy towards a region. And I think from something like that, like anytime we object to something, we seem happy to march on the Dáil, but we don't seem happy to object loudly enough about the ignorance of economic development in our region.
Yeah, the activism is an interesting one, Edwin, like getting that collective, like, so let's take Lacken, like we said it throughout the county, people living all over the world were chiming in on message boards about Lacken that had no relation whatsoever, many of whom probably have never set foot in Lacken GA Club. but there is a collective will to get together and help each other. How do you tap into that and stop, you know, because one of the things that's going to come up with this is one or two, at least one or two clubs. There are some clubs that are going to thrive in this reshaping and could really benefit, dare I say, possibly in some cases off the back of other clubs.
Yeah, and like I think of the example in Acklin, there was a famous competition here played for years called the Scanlan Cup. It was, you know, it was players from different areas from all around the island. And there were six teams that played in the Scanlan Cup. And my brother-in-law tells me of when he was playing in the Scanlan Cup, all six of those teams would have been extremely competitive at junior championship level in Mayo. And a couple of them would likely have won it. But Acklin were not winning junior championships when the Scanlan Cup was at its height. To the level that they should have been. And the reason was, there was so much rivalry within the Scanlan Cup that they couldn't come together for the common good for the Acklin team. And that sometimes happens. We heard about it for so long with Galway Hurling. And I just wonder, is we all love the GAA, but is that kind of rivalry and that kind of localized tensions, is that part of the problem? John mentioned, you know, about how the Irish psyche there. And I just like to ask him, like, John has worked on, you know, economic development right across the European Union and beyond. And what are the particular roadblocks in the Irish mentality that you notice compared to other areas? You know, is there, you know, is that kind of parish rivalry or that localized kind of passion? You know, we all, it's a positive in so many ways, but sometimes can it be an obstacle?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. I wish I could speak on it for a longer time than I can. The core issue is, in most European countries, there is a lot of devolved government right down to the village level. So, for example, I was parking cars on Rig Sunday a few years ago, and I was chatting to a police superintendent. And he told me that they'd had a visit from the Dutch police who were looking at how Ireland polices big public events. And the Dutch cop asked the superintendent, who's in charge? Like, if the weather suddenly deteriorated, who would step in and stop this? And the superintendent said, well, nobody. I could stand on the path up to the statue in the Reek and say, sorry, you can't go up here. And people could walk past me. I don't have the power to stop them. And that's a lovely illustration that in a Polish town or a French town, there would be a mayor of Westport. The mayor of Westport would have a certain control on the police force and on running events in the area. And there would be a budget, which if he wasted, the people would turn on him and elect a different mayor. In other words, there would be devolved responsibility. Now, we have a highly centralized form of government in Ireland. If you add up the TDs, the senators and the county councillors per capita in the country, we're at the lowest rung in the EU. So that's one thing. Now, the other thing, if I may revert to an earlier point that was made, it's always easy to say, we need a totally new constitution and new political parties. Actually, no, we don't, and that never works. Back a few years ago, the students, the transition year students in St. Nathie's, which has very close connection with the GAA, they did a project on what they called economic apartheid in Ireland. They were focusing in on this very issue, regional development. And they were invited to give their present their work in the Dáil, and the teacher asked me to go along and ride shotgun. I didn't actually need to. These are very bright kids. And at the end of the presentation, one TD attending it, it had been boycotted by one political party because a TD from a different political party actually invited them, said, you know, perhaps what we need is a grouping of TDs from the regions who can meet apolitically to talk about common problems. In other words, to depoliticize the issue. And I almost fell off the bench because it never occurred to me that they didn't already have that. No, they don't. And of course, to go back to the point that was made, regional development is a highly politicized issue. If I get my name attached to some innovation, that benefits me politically. And I will fight tooth and nail not to let another party get in ahead of me. Now, that's appalling, the lack of cooperation between the different political parties. And if you don't address that, you haven't a hope of ever getting the critical mass of politicians together to change, to stop the Dublin-based juggernaut ignoring the west of Ireland.
I think one of the things there that fascinates me is that the solution to many of our problems has been on our doorstep, in that when the devolved parliament came in Belfast, it emphasised power sharing. And from listening to John talk now, I'm just thinking it is the lack of devolution in our politics that has caused all of our ills, and that we could enforce greater cooperation between politicians for the public good, rather than this bipartisan attitude.
If I could interject, it's actually worse than that, because what happens is we set up, I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, a Potemkin organization. That's a facade. It looks like a parliament, but it isn't really a parliament. And one such organization is the North and West Regional Assembly. That kind of is portrayed as being a devolved organization that can treat close to the ground the issues that are important in the Northwest region. But it has no budget. The people attending it are three nominated county councillors from the participating eight counties. These councillors act individually and have no mandate to report back to their county councils. And we're led to believe that this is the way national development policy will be fed to the regions. In other words, our very institutions are often duplicitous. They're often a sham. They let us believe that power has been devolved, but it isn't. And ultimately, the only way you'll get responsible behavior in the regions is to allocate them budgets, police them so there isn't corrupt use made of the money. And if they waste it on stupid schemes, that's their business. But at the moment, all these decisions are taken centrally. When I was doing the Mayo study, I tried to find out, was there a regional strategy for road development in the county? No, it's the National Roads Authority. And they take 25 years to make up their mind. Will they improve the road from Ballina to Castlebar? That's what happens.
Yeah, and I think if we localize it as well, like the big road project that's ongoing in Mayo at the minute is the Castlebar, or the Westport to Turla Road. And again, going back to that, didn't happen because of a particular strategy for the West. It was the intransigence of Michael Ring effectively that made that happen. And whether you agree with the project or not, that's not how decisions should be arrived at, you know, and it just shows the kind of the mentality there. But John mentioned, you know, about, you know, I suppose accountability and the lack thereof. And I just think it's very telling. I made this point on a podcast a couple of weeks ago that the reaction since the All-Ireland final defeat, the scorn and questions asked of James Horan, some valid questions and some off the walls, was far above and beyond anything I recall being directed at Enda Kenny when he was Taoiseach and based in this county, you know, which I think is very telling in terms of maybe, you know, maybe we care too much when it comes to football and we don't care enough when it comes to real life. And maybe football is the escape. Maybe, you know, that we don't, that it can be very bleak if we look at it. But I think that indifference is enabling inaction from central government, because that indifference is there. And just to bring it back to a football perspective again, you know, I was looking here at the clubs we've looked at. Ask yourself this question: how many Mayo players in recent years have come from Achill, Ballycroy, Kiltane, Ballycastle and Lacken? Not very many, very few. But it wasn't always that way. 70 years ago, when Mayo last won an All-Ireland, there were players on the team from Bangor, from Ballycastle and from Lacken. The man considered the best full forward of all time, Tom Langan, is from Ballycastle. And how would Tom Langan progress now if he was playing at a lower level that Ballycastle are forced to play at because they've been crippled by depopulation? And that's the reality that we're seeing there. And the counterpoint to that, when you look at the urbanisation, is that the Castlebar Mitchells, the Brafies, the Ballinrobes, Clamars, Westports, etc., are awash with players. And I remember interviewing Tom Kniff and him telling me he was on the Castlebar Mitchells under 16B team. An awful lot of players in that scenario might have stopped playing. He went the other way. He won minor and under 21 at Ireland's with Mayo, played in senior finals. But that's what's happening. So you have small clubs just about hanging on and they're playing at C or D level. And then you have bigger clubs with too many players, and there might be a right nugget of a player in there who gets lost in that system. And, you know, therefore, you're not getting the most, arguably the strongest players getting the same level of opportunity. There's a huge gulf between the levels of opportunity and the challenges that you're seeing at a rural club compared to an urban club, you know. And so this is why, you know, the GA is a very good prism for looking at this, but it can be applied across all sports. It's just a lot easier to analyze in the GA because of the parish rule. You can define the numbers in a particular parish. But these are problems that that all sporting groups and that all elements of society in Mayo are facing.
Yeah, the point of I wanted to make was, and it is something that's very much on the agenda at the moment, because the county convention is coming up and Tormacady have a motion regarding parentage. So we can talk about solutions to the societal problem being dealt with in the political arena. But from a JA perspective, one solution that will assist is what Tormacady are actually suggesting at the moment, because the inevitable result of urbanisation has been the move of families from rural areas to urban areas. And that parentage rule might redress some of that, in that the children of people who have moved away, now, it can't be unrealistic, but maybe not that far, would be able to continue to contribute to those clubs. And it gives those clubs a lifeline. But that's a far easier solution to introduce than the ones we require on a societal level. And the two can't be divorced. We have to now, as GAA communities, all up and down the Western Seaboard, react as a political lobby and as someone that can keep the footprint in our heartlands. And they are heartlands. Like Ed mentioned, Tom Langan came from Ballycastle. I can remember in the 80s, Lacken had great footballers on the Mayo team. They were at the top end of Mayo football. And what we don't want to do is lose that footprint or that heritage, because they are part of our culture and they're part of the culture and the memory of that area. So anything we can do to augment those clubs is vital, but it can't be divorced from society as a whole. We have to actually act as communities now and say that we need the changes that will help us develop.
Yeah, and on that front, like it's encouraging maybe to see that, you know, a group has been set up within MAOG on this to look at demographics and look at you know, rural depopulation and clubs that are struggling, because like we said at the outset, like Lacken's problem is it's a wolf that's coming to many doors in the decades to come, looking at the trends and looking at the numbers that we've outlined there. So you know, you're looking at a GA problem and you're looking at a societal problem. Yeah, I might just ask John, like, you know, what would he suggest that the GA and the people individually can do? Because there's a sense out there that, you know, I'm only one person, what can I do? But if enough people think that way, well, then that's a staggering amount of indifference. And I think that's what we're seeing.
We're just trying to win Sam, John. That's all we want to do, win Sam.
Yeah, well, if the depopulation is affecting the organization and running of county football, it puts it on the county GAA's agenda. You know, there's no silver bullet here. There's no quick solution. It's a problem that's affecting a much wider area than Mayo. And I'm so impressed by the energy and the dedication in the GAA. And if even a tiny fraction of that was devoted to realistic ways of solving the background problems that are creating the depopulation, then you'd be on your way. And of course, the identification of the counties with their club and the individual parishes with their club. I go back and forth around the county. I love to see these messages congratulating people or urging them on. I mean, there's a dynamism that's waiting to be harnessed in this tiny way that could help everyone. But there's no other organization I can think of in the county that can do that. None. You know, the GAA is it.
Ciarán.
Yeah, the one thing, and it's a phrase you'll hear used tritely pretty regularly, but we're only as strong as our weakest link. So for those who have any doubt about whether the prevailing attitude that exists now of, well, that's their problem, not mine, matters. It does, because their problem will become yours. We are genuinely only as strong as our weakest link. So this shouldn't necessarily be something that our communities work on. It needs to be something that we form alliances on. So we work with the communities that are doing okay, that we work with communities up and down the Western Seaboard, and perhaps we work with other county boards who are suffering the same fate as Mayo are at the moment, because this has a depopulation has a huge effect. And the solution that Turmikeedy are proposing solves two problems. It solves bottlenecks in urban clubs and it helps rural clubs. We need to find multifaceted solutions to this. And ultimately where we'll get to is we'll have good administrators in our clubs because depopulation affects that. We'll have good coaches in our clubs because depopulation affects that. It's not simply about the loss of players anymore. It's about an overall loss of dynamism within our communities. And I always remember,
Morris Hayes, the late senator and a longtime GAA administrator, used to say that you could learn anything you needed to about politics from the GAA.
So we've got the people that can come up with solutions to this. They're embedded in every one of our clubs and parishes, and we just need to harness it now as an alliance of some description that can bring about worthwhile and meaningful change.
I love the phrase, that's brilliant, Ciarán, and I love the phrase footprint that you used as well, because it just seemed to jump out at me more than it ever has when you said it, because that is it. Mayo's footprint is Irishtown, Finney, it's Clare Island, it's Bunnyconlan, it's Rossport, and if we all want to be this collective force that are trying to do something very, very special on a big long story as a county, we have to recognize the fact that we're all linked together in this very visceral way. Edwin, we've done our best to cover a wide topic here.
Yeah, I was just thinking there, Rob, we could definitely have, and I think I suggested this to yourself and Ciarán, we could definitely have a 5 or 6 part series on this, but we wanted to try and contain it into one podcast because we just felt it was important to, you know, to tease out the issue as best we could. There are so many strands we could talk about our lived experiences, how hard it is for people to build where they're living, how hard it is for people to get jobs, you know, there's so many sides to this, you know, but ultimately what we're trying to demonstrate here is the extent of the problem as we see it in Mayo, not just affecting GAA clubs, because that's how it has come to prominence, but it affects everyone, you know. So that footprint in a GAA club, but it's also replicated in so many other strands. It's a community footprint. And I just think it's a topic we've covered before in the past, and we'll certainly be covering it again in the future in the Mayo News. But I think it's a topic we'll be returning to in podcast form as well. I do think the time for, you know, collective, maybe not collective action, but the collective voice that's there to be harnessed that time is upon us.
John Bradley, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and we hope to have you back on very, very soon. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Ciarán O'Hara, Chair Human of Kiltane GAA Club. Great to have you on. We'll have you back.
All right. Glad to hear it, Rob. I haven't outworn my welcome.
Good work, good work. Edwin, thanks. Thanks to you for listening, folks. Join us for more podcasts very, very soon. Keeping you going during the winter. Baby,